What's the number one advice that I would give to new graduates and Chinese medicine students, particularly in the last year of your studies? This can also apply to any TCM student. If you're enrolled in a course and you're planning on becoming a practitioner, what would be my number one advice for you? That's what we're going to talk about in this video. You don't want to miss this. This is really, really important. And it's not something that schools will tell you straight off the bat. Okay, so I'm Marie Hopkinson. I'm a herbalist and an acupuncturist. Why should you listen to me? Well, I've been training students for many, many years, over 15 years in formal university level education. A lot of informal courses and things like that. I've had lots of students do work experience practical with me. I've had students that have graduated and then come and worked at my clinic. And I've been doing this for more than 20 years, 22 years, I think exactly. I love Chinese medicine and I want to see our profession thrive. And one of the common things I see is students graduate, they're passionate about it, and then they just don't practice. They don't get into the practice for a lot of reasons. And I think that this one thing could really help you. Now, I'm not going to be one of these people that goes, oh, this one thing, when is that bloody one thing? I'll tell you right now. So the one thing is, and in the video, I'm going to also tell you how you go about doing this, is get as much hands-on work experience that you can get before you graduate or soon after you graduate. Now, before you graduate, it's going to be heaps easier to get in the door, and I'll give you the reasons for that in this video as well. So when you're at school, you're in a kind of a bubble, right? Like, you are practicing Chinese medicine in your student clinic, but it's never going to be exactly the same as real life. And when you get out of your school, you kind of like go, okay, what will I do now? And you almost need someone to model that for you. Now, if your program, your study program has a work experience component built into it where you go on site and you do internships or things like that, that's great. It really helped me when I graduated to go to China, but it wasn't the same, and it didn't give me anything near the same experience as it did working in someone else's clinic. And I wish I'd known this advice before I graduated. And I kind of actually had, looking back, yeah, I did go and visit a couple of clinics before I graduated, because two of my teachers were very open to that, and they encouraged us to do that. And they basically said, yeah, you can come to my clinic. And I'd only done one day of observation with one teacher that I had. And that taught me so much, and not just taught you what you want to do, but it taught me a lot of things that I thought, I'm never going to do this, right? Now, I'm not going to say who that person is or anything like that. And it's no reflection on their practices in their results or how they do it. But it was like, you get to see how they run their business. You get to see how they do what they do for their patients. And some of that stuff wasn't necessarily a wrong thing. I just thought, that isn't for me. That's not how I'm going to do things. So what you need to do is, as soon as you are able to, right, like you've decided, I'm going to study Chinese medicine, you're enrolled in the course, and you have these gaps of time, this is a good time to do it, right? So, you know, maybe you have a holiday time, break time, or your workload isn't as much, and you're able to dedicate one day a week, one day a month even, to go and do work experience at other practitioners' clinics. Make the opportunity for yourself. No one's going to knock on the door and make your dreams come true. No one's going to knock on the door and give you those opportunities. If your lecturers are doing that for you, that's great, fantastic, good on them. But many people don't get that opportunity handed to them or offered to them. They have to seek it out themselves. And there's nothing wrong with seeking it out for yourself. So this is me giving you permission to go and seek it out for yourself and telling you that you should do this. So what do? You try to get... to break it right down, is you go in and look at who are the acupuncturists in your area, or if you already know you have a special interest, specialty idea in something, like let's say you want to do fertility medicine or you want to do pain management medicine, and you know there's a practitioner that already does that, you would seek those people out above, you know, that just the people that are around you. But if not, start with the people that are around you. If you're really shy and you don't know how to get started in doing any of this, approach some of your lecturers at your college who teach you, and ask them. Now, if they're already supervising you, they're already especially supervising you in a clinical sense, you're already seeing what they do in some way. So it's great if you can step beyond those people, because there's tons of practitioners out there that are never going to come into the university or the college. They're never going to be doing that. And you'll learn so much from just seeing how all these different things occur, how they operate. I'm not saying every practitioner is going to say, yes, oh, this will be so good. But in this video, I'm going to tell you what I would want someone to do for me and what would make it easier for me to make myself available to do this, right? So stay tuned. Buckle your seatbelt, everybody. We're going on a journey. So I've written some notes here. I don't usually do that, but instead of rambling, I'm going to read out my notes. So you want to find the practitioners first. So make a list of them and call them up or send them an email. Introduce yourself, right? So I'd say, hi, my name's Marie Hopkinson. I'm studying Chinese medicine. I'm in my third year. And I really wanted to see if there was an opportunity for me to just come and do some work experience to observe your clinical practice or possibly even to meet you first and see if that would be a good fit. See if I'd be a good fit for your practice. I make it clear that you don't have any other expectations. I'm not expecting I'm not expecting to do anything to patients or interfere with your practice practice at all. Make it clear that you're professional, that you're or offer that. I wouldn't make the letter too long-winded, otherwise people won't read it, but you basically want to make it easy for them to do this. And I'll tell you some reasons why it's not easy for practitioners to do this, because most practitioners are self-employed, and they are concerned that if the patients have a bad experience, then the patients might not come back again. So what could make a patient have a bad experience? I'm sorry, but I just jump around in these videos. I know that I do. I'm trying to stay on track. So in the letter, you basically want to make it clear that they're going to have a good experience. So you might allay some of the fears that they might have. And you might say, I'm very professional. I'd be happy to meet you or take you for a coffee beforehand whatever's going to work for them, right? They might not even have time for a coffee, right? They might be so busy they don't care about that. But they might be like, yeah, I'd love to have a coffee with a local graduate. Now, chances are that the practitioners that you're contacting, somewhere in the mix of that, are going to be practices that are thinking they'd like to expand, and you might get a job out of this in the future. That's one of the reasons why you should do this. But the main reason at this point is just so that you can get the experience to see what's out there, see how things are done, and let the juices flow while you're still a student, so that when you graduate, you kind of have a better idea of what you want and how you're going to go about doing your practice. So make that letter or that email or that introductory call, even calling is fine, like whatever you feel comfortable doing, or do both of those things. If you send an email and you get no reply, give them a call, like follow up. Now, don't hound someone, but it's okay to follow up. Sometimes I send emails 2, 3, 4 times to the same person before they even answer back, if it's what's called a cold call, right? Because you might send it and they're busy. You might send it and it goes in their junk mail. You might send it and they forgot, or something like that. So the point is to sell yourself as something that's going to benefit their practice in a way, right? And it's going to be easy on them having you there. It's not going to be a burden on them having you there. So you can put some of these things we're going to go forward now in the letter if you want, in the introductory letter, or you could just handle that as it comes out or something like that. So getting back to that thing I was saying, like, what are some of the reasons why I wouldn't want to do this, or why I've been burned doing this before? Because I have had many students, I've opened my doors and let many students come in, and they've even been my students, as in I've known them from the college where I've taught, and I've kind of seen them in that environment. But then when they came into my environment, they were maybe acted a little bit differently. So one is being unprofessional. Now, what's unprofessional? It could be your attire, like your dress standard. I want to say you should wear to the work experience what you would wear in your clinic, but some people are wearing hippie sarongs and inappropriate clothes, to be honest, in their own clinics, and that's not great. So wear something that is professional. If you have a dress code at your student clinic, I wouldn't wear something that's got the logo from your school on it, but something professional and whatever fits in the professional standard. So for an acupuncturist, for instance, you're supposed to have closed-in shoes because needles can drop down. that kind of thing. So think about that. Use your common sense. Hopefully you've got some if you've gotten this far in Chinese medicine school. Do that. You know, make yourself presentable. Don't have body odor or BO. Make sure you wear deodorant. Have a breath mint before you go in. Make sure your breath smells good. Like, this is important when you're going to be in front of, like, client facing. Like, you're going to be in front of the public and people. So that kind of stuff, right? Second one, and this is the most important thing, never speak in the consult. Okay, so let's say I'm the practitioner and I've got my patient there and you're sitting there in the corner. You should be fly on the wall. Never speak when the patient's there. That is the number one no-no. So if no one's ever told you that, if you've got a question, write it down. And then if it's appropriate, you could ask the practitioner when the patient's not there in a separate private time, as in away from other people. One of the things the practitioner is going to have to do is get the consent of the patient coming in that it's okay. Now, if you're a clinic that constantly has students there, the patient might not be bamboozled by that or worried about that. But the number one concern that the patient is going to have now is privacy, like what this person's listening in, and they might even be taking notes. So I would, as in you, the student might be taking notes. So I would ask the practitioner. Don't assume that you can take notes, because that could be encroaching on the patient's privacy. So you need to make sure that you check that's okay, rather than assume it's okay. And never, ever, ever, ever ask questions to the patient. Now, the patient might address you, and I'm not saying you should just be silent and be weird. You could talk back to them, like as in have that conversation if they're engaging you. They might say, oh, hi, oh, where are you studying? Oh, how long have you been studying for? But be aware that you don't want to, oh, well, you know, I was lying on my bed and one day I had this dream and a Chinese gnome came to me and told me da, da, da. And you've got this weird story that's taking up all the time. And that could be annoying for the practitioner as well. So what I'm getting at is, don't be annoying. If you're not sure, check yourself before you wreck yourself. Like, be aware of these things, okay? So try to be more self-aware. And it should, even though you're not getting paid for this to be there, many practitioners actually charge people to do these kinds of observations. So be thankful that you don't have to pay for it, even if you do have to pay for it, it's not your right to just interject with questions and things like that to the patient. So pretend as if you're not there. Just don't interact with the patient unless they interact with you, and if they do, keep it to a minimum. So the next thing that you need to do in presenting yourself to the practitioner to get these opportunities is to show that you're of value to them. So once you do get to go the first day that they've allowed you to come into the clinic, or they've decided to meet you for a meeting, if you detect anything that's lacking that you could help with, go and help do those things or offer to do those things. For instance, like sweeping the floor, vacuuming the clinic, changing the towels. Don't just jump in and do stuff that you're not sure how to do it, like making up herbs, right? But if there's something you can do that would help them, you're going to show that you're providing value to them and they're going to want to have you back in the clinic. What I'm getting at is, don't think, oh, that's beneath me. I'm not here to fold up their old dirty towels and, put them in the washing basket. I'm not here to empty the garbage cans. But if you do that stuff, that's not why you're there. Like, you're not there to empty the garbage cans. But if you do that, that practitioner is going to think, man, every time Marie comes over to my clinic, it just makes my life easier. I feel better. I go home and I'm not as stressed because I didn't have to empty the garbage cans, or they were just, they were just there. They weren't so taxing on me. So try, your job is, obviously you're there to learn, but your job is to make that practitioner have a really great experience so they're going to want you to come back. Simple, right? I use this trick or this psychological tool a lot when I've been doing job interviews. And so I learned it from another entrepreneur, right? So he uses the keys drop thing. I sometimes drop a pen. So this is like, let's say you're walking to the office or wherever you're going, you've got, hi Johnny, come in for your interview, or coming in somewhere. I will purposefully drop something. Sometimes I just drop things anyway. Like, I just, so he doesn't drop their keys from time to time. But you make a point, if not, it's like, oh, bonk, here's my keys. But like as if you fumbled at the door, like this is what this guy would say. He would go to the door and he would sort of like fumble at the door and accidentally drop his keys. And instead of, and just wait a second for you, right, and see if the other person, the interviewee, bobs down and picks up the keys. If they're not even making a move to do that, like he would be like, I'm never going to hire this person. So it's a trait, it's a character trait to be someone that will do whatever it takes. There's no job beneath you. So some people would be thinking, well, it's not my keys. Why should I bend down and pick them up? I didn't drop them. And that's completely true. But you're showing in that moment that you can be of service to that person. So you can, I'm not saying you do this where you drop a pen and see if the practitioner picks it up. But I'm saying if an opportunity like that occurs, be it by design or by accident, if you jump in and you're showing that, hey, well, I'll do whatever it takes. I'm here to serve you. I'm here to learn from you. There's a kind of a respect in that, right? So, you know, doing that. Now, this could be awkward for some people because they're not used to acting like this. They might not know how to do this kind of stuff. That the practitioner that you're following might be a lot younger than you. You know, some people go into Chinese medicine school and they're already 30, 40, 50, and the practitioner that you're wanting to train with or observe might be, you know, I don't know, 25, 30 or something like that. I don't know. So you have to get over that. So the next one is, so after we've discussed providing value, looking for those opportunities to show that you can provide value, you might need to put some of that in the letter. You don't say, I can provide heaps of value for you, but you want to make it seem as if I'm not here, I'm not expecting anything from you other than I'd love just an opportunity. And then once you get that opportunity, you show that you can provide the value. The next one is turn up on time. I wouldn't turn up super early because that can also be really demanding, right? So 5 minutes early is fine. Half an hour early is too much. If I have a student that comes to my clinic and there's gaps with no patients, they're often eager. And I'm not saying don't be eager, but they're asking questions. You also as a practitioner want them to have a good experience, hopefully, right? And so it can be draining for you having someone else in your space. I have had a lot of work experience students from high school that have no interest necessarily in doing Chinese medicine, but they might be interested in, I don't know, something else about my business. Maybe they're just there because they need to fulfill their quota, but I want them to learn something. So because I'm a natural teacher, it's demanding for me to have someone there in my space all the time. Like I wouldn't be able to just sit there and make a video. Like now I'd be sort of wondering, what are they doing? And you know, what I'm getting at is it can be taxing for them. So don't make it extra taxing by rocking up half an hour early. Come 5 minutes early. Don't be late. If you come late, let's say that you say the practitioner says be there at 9, or they say the first patient's at 9. And they've already taken that first patient in. It's going to be awkward. You get there at 10 past 9 and then you're knocking on the door and, you know, the practitioner hasn't had time to introduce you to the patient and all that sort of stuff. It's really awkward. So make an effort to be there on time. And I mean, if you've got no way of knowing how long it takes you to get there, aim to be extra early, but don't hang outside the clinic expecting to come in that early. Go get a coffee and come back or whatever you do, right? Go for a walk. Okay, so why would you want to do all this? Why would you want to go to this effort to get these opportunities? What will it do for you? And what should you be looking for, and what should you be doing in this time? One of the biggest things you can see is how they run their clinic, how they run the business side of the clinic. Look at the systems that they use. Are things flowing smoothly? Are the people generally happy that are there? If there's a receptionist there, are they happy? Is there always a kerfuffle with something that could be better done? Now, please don't go and tell that practitioner, oh, you should be doing this better, and I've noticed a kerfuffle every time. Like, pick your opportunities and your moments if you're ever going to have that conversation with them. But you're looking at things that you might think, I'm not going to do that for me. Or like you might even notice stuff that's unethical in their practice, right? That you think, I don't think I would do that. I don't like the way that they do that. But you also might find some really good gems of what you do want to do. And you think, wow, that works really well. I've never seen that showed like that. Or I've never heard a practitioner explain Chinese medicine to a patient like that. Or, you know, they might have had to handle a difficult case where the person came in and they weren't getting better. And what did they say to the patient? How did they encourage them to keep on going with the treatment or something like that? So you're going to get to see some of these things that you won't see in a student clinic. Because in the student clinic, you've got the one system that they use. So if you go to multiple practitioner places, you might see people that use paper diaries, people that use electronic booking systems, people that have a hefty waiting room full of people, and some people that just... You know, some practitioners that are seeing lots of patients at once, and how do they manage that multi-bed practice? And that's the next one I want to get at, because in most student clinics, they don't run a multi-bed practice, as in each student doesn't look after two patients at once, because it would be a nightmare for the supervisor. As someone who's been a supervisor for many years, it's hard enough me having, once I had 9 students all seeing their own patients at once. So every hour there could be 7 to 9 patients, and then imagine if each of those students had 2, so now you've got 18 patients. I get that I'm not trying to have a go at schools, because it's not possible for them to do it like that. But when you're out in the real world, most acupuncturists, if you're not doing Chinese herbs and you're just doing acupuncture particularly, and some people who do herbs and acupuncture run like this as well, will have 2 or 3 patients an hour. So they'll see a patient every half an hour or every 20 minutes, some even every 15 minutes. How do they do that? How do they manage that? How do they manage that flow? That is super exciting and interesting, right? I've had graduates that have been really good academically that have come to work in my clinic, that not all, but a few that come to mind, that really struggled with seeing more than one patient at once, because they'd never tried it before, and they just couldn't capacitate it in their mind. But I'm not saying it will alleviate all that issue, but it will definitely help you if you see that modeled, if you see that them people doing that before you get in and actually do it yourself. What systems work really well, what systems don't work really well. And then you're also seeing the results from different treatments and different treatment styles. So some practitioners might use a lot of cupping or gua sha or bleeding methods or moxibustion or herbs or external use herbs, and, you know, different things that they might do, or they might be very well known for certain conditions. You know, you might have a practice that sees a lot of patients for tinnitus or a lot of things, like a lot of sports injury things. And you'll just get a variety of different kinds of patients coming in that you wouldn't see usually in a student clinic environment. So it's very valuable if you can do this. I get that it's another thing to do and you're like, oh, Marie, I'm already studying, I'm already busy. Even if you do this for 2 or 3 practices, you will learn something. Now, some practitioners are not going to want you to come into the treatment room, especially the first time you come in. So again, going back to that, I'm here to provide value for you. It is still valuable for you as a student to not go in the treatment room, to watch what they do outside of that. Now, yeah, okay, if there's not much else going on, you might have to sit there and read a book or do some private study or something like that. But be prepared to do that and realize that, okay, I'm still going to learn something by being here. It's not a waste of your time. How do people pay? What are the processes in that? How do people book in? That kind of stuff. And there might be some gaps or some downtime where you can ask the practitioner some questions and things like that. So like being of service to that practitioner would look something like this. You know, if there's a bit of space, would you like me to make you a coffee or a tea? Is there anything else I can do for you? Have you got any, you know, if while you're with those other patients, have you got any little jobs that you'd like me to do? You know, you can put stamps on envelopes. You can write out patients' birthday cards. You can, I don't know, there's a lot. I always come up with little jobs for people to do. Now, I wouldn't encourage students to come. Please don't watch this video and hit me up. That's not why I'm making this at all. Thank goodness most people that watch this don't live in Perth. They live in other countries usually. But I wouldn't solicit students to come to my place with the intention that they can't see any patients, they can't be in the treatment room. But I have to give the patients the choice, and I can't coerce them or make them feel bad if they're like the patients, if they're not going to agree to that. And I also may have some patients that are a little uncomfortable, and I can already tell that. So I'm speaking from experience, because this has happened. So like some patients don't mind at all. So there's been times where I've had students and I've said, look, I'm really sorry, but I'm just not even going to ask this patient because, you know, I know they've been going through something or they're very concerned about privacy and they just don't want anyone else to know, even, you know, even if you say that this is confidential and whatever, but, you know, it might perturb the patients to look around and see that person is writing notes. It would make me uncomfortable if I was a patient going to another person's clinic and two people are writing notes on me if it wasn't a student clinic. So if I know I'm coming there as in a student clinic. Now, in the student clinics, is either the patients don't pay any money or they pay a very low cost. And they know up front, the patients know I'm coming into a student environment. So I'm a part of lots of student type of clinic things where they're practitioners, but we're all learning, where my teacher will ask the questions, feel the pulse, you know, and then the patients go and we feel their pulse and you're all writing notes, you know, but the patients know that's what they're coming in for. That's not the regular everyday sort of clinic. Now, some practices, GP practices, do this a lot where they'll say, we are a teaching clinic. Please tell your practitioner if you don't want a student to observe your consultation. So they're assuming that in every consultation, a student's going to be observing there. And I think this is something that the Chinese medicine profession definitely needs to get better at, is providing these opportunities and being more known for that, and for that not to be weird. Oh, wow, there's two people here or there's a student here. Now, some practitioners won't care about some of this stuff that I've said. They'll think that it's better. They feel like, oh, students are following me. Students are coming in. That makes them look good to their patients. And they might love that. So you might be providing them with a bit of added value just in that. So in general, I think most practitioners want the profession to succeed. I don't think they're going to say no to someone asking, can I come just as a one-off thing, right? Don't say, can I come for the next 6 weeks? So just ask, can I come once, and see how that goes after that opportunity, after that thing. Especially if you've presented yourself well and the practitioner's like, yeah, this person wasn't, you know, that wasn't a burden on me. They've made my day better. Yeah, I'd love to have you come back in again. Getting back to the taxing thing about asking the questions, just be aware that you don't chew that practitioner's ear off. Now, this is probably partly my fault just as much as it is from the students, and I don't want my students watching this to think, oh no, that was me. So I don't want my students watching this and thinking, oh, that was me, because it's more me. I can't help myself but talk. So our students come in and they're like, what about this? And I'm like, oh, let me give you a whole lesson on this. Let me tell you all about dampness. Let me tell you all about this. So I will talk and talk and talk. And then I realize at the end of the day, oh, I've been talking all day. My voice is a bit rough because I've been talking all day, right? And I wouldn't normally do the talking with the patients and talk to the students, make a couple of videos, whatever you've done. Right? So it's not just talking, wearing their voice out. It's talking sort of, mentally taxing you, or, you know, draining you potentially. So try to be aware. Okay, I hope this video has been useful and helpful to you. This is definitely the number one thing that I think as a student or a new graduate, you're going to benefit from this. Now, it is easier for you to ask for these opportunities as a student than as a graduate. Why? Because when you've graduated, there's this thing of like, well, you've graduated now, you should know what to do. You've graduated now, why? That's a bit weird. Why you know, especially if you've been doing Chinese medicine for a while, like a year even is a while when you've graduated. And then you call up a practice and you say, can I do some work experience? It seems like, oh, what's wrong with that person? They might, you know, there could be a little bit of that. Or are they trying to steal my secret sauce? Like, are they trying to get my ideas, steal my ideas? So it's better if you do this as a student. You'll be able to get away with it in a way because you're a student. Like, I'm learning. I'm still, now you're still a student when you graduate. You're a student of life and all that jazz. But that's why I think it's easier as a new, than as a new graduate. It's easier as a student. Now, you might form some relationships with practitioners that continue on in that experience after you graduate, that you might decide to keep going, or they could transform into opportunities for work, for future work for you. And that would be great. So you would then know, okay, I know other practitioners. Now, why is this important other than just learning these things I've said, like looking at different people's systems, looking at how they run their business, looking at the types of treatments they do? Like, that's all interesting and that's all good and it's valuable. But there's another thing that's also really valuable is networking, getting to know other practitioners in your area, because they can refer patients to you in the future, right? So let's say you meet two or three different practitioners. One's a fertility clinic, one's someone else, one's something else. Well, they might be going away and you might get some locum work out of it. They might be going away and they might be like, oh yeah, I remember like so-and-so has only just graduated and they've set up their own private practice nearby. I'll refer some patients to them while I'm away. So my patients can be looked after knowing that they're going to look up, like they're not going to sort of, you know, steal them out of my practice and still send them back to me when I'm back. That kind of thing works really well between practitioners. Or locum work means you come in to their practice and you operate from within their practice, like as a subcontracted practitioner, as a locum practitioner. They might go away for 6 weeks. Like, it's really hard for acupuncturists to go away because you have lots of people that rely on you. If you're a single practitioner in your own practice and you're like, what are all my patients going to do when I go away? And many practices around there are already busy. So that patient's now got to try to squeeze into someone else's practice who's already busy. Whereas when you're a new graduate, you're not usually that busy. So, and you're grateful for those patients and that work. So it can be really good. It can be very good for that. You might then develop into a special area of interest practice that's not them. They get patients that fit what you do. They send them to you in the future. It might develop into a relationship where you've got another mentor, someone that you can ask, hey, I'm really struggling with this. What would you think about that? Or, hey, I'm signing a lease for my business, and they could help you maybe just give you a heads up. Hey, watch out for this. Watch out for that. Make sure you do this. Like, that is invaluable, right? Which means it's like, how else are you going to get that mentorship? It's really hard without relationship. So that's where it starts. Many of these mentorship relationships can come from lecturers that you've got in college. Again, if you've got a lecturer that's in a college and that's all they do, they don't run their own business, they wouldn't have that much advice to give you maybe because they haven't signed any commercial leases or they haven't dealt with inter-practitioner conflicts as much as someone who's out there doing that all the time and that's that's what they do. So I hope this has been useful and helpful to you as a potential hopefully a potential new graduate, a student of Chinese medicine. When should you start doing this? Like, you could probably start doing this as soon as you've got some clinical knowledge of Chinese medicine. So if you've started doing your own student clinic yourself, I mean, even in first year, you're going to get some benefit out of it. But if you're in that final year, your brain is kind of switching over from, okay, I'm not just going to be in the bubble of being in my school all the time. I'm going to have to think about, what am I going to do for myself when I graduate? How am I going to run my business? Am I going to be by myself? Am I going to be with other practitioners? It's normal for people to spend a few years working with somebody else or working for someone else in a busy practice already and then branching out onto your own. That's a common pathway that people take, and doing these work experience things would provide opportunity to do that. So I wanted to make this video because I'm not sure whether colleges encourage you to do that. At the college where I'm at, some students just seem to naturally do that themselves and some don't. I'm sure that's the case with all colleges, right? With all students, right? All over the world. But unless your college has a dedicated program where they're like, okay, you get a credit for going out and doing this, many students just don't think about doing it. They don't realize what opportunity they could have from doing it. So I hope this has been helpful and useful to you. And if you are studying Chinese medicine, you got this far, hopefully you probably are. If you got this far, well, good luck with your rest of your course. I really hope you do well. And if you've got a question about Chinese medicine, put it in the comments. I usually reply. I might make another video about something if you've got a question about something Chinese medicine related. All right, that's enough of me ranting on. Take it easy. I'll see you on another video soon.